This episode of the FitCast is brought to you by the PTAdvantage.com, an online personal training solution to help trainers save time and make more money. It is simply the best resource that I found for trainers and coaches to train people online. Check them out at the PTAdvantage.com. Hello, welcome to episode number 278 of the FitCast. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have back on the show Tom Venuto of Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on again, Kevin.
Yeah, so I want to just briefly take a step back because over, you know, almost 300 episodes, sometimes people jump on, you know, after 200 or 250, they could just be starting today. I would love it if you could just give like a brief bio. Really your history, because you've really had a great history in the fitness industry. I'd love to hear about it.
Sure. Thanks. Well, if I go all the way back, I've been training for 30 years now. I started when I was 14 in high school. And then when I went to college, I found out that I could get a degree in exercise science and do this for a living. So after I got my degree, I went out, got certified through National Strength and Conditioning Association, American College of Sports Medicine, and right away started training people in gyms and also worked as a health club manager. So I was a personal trainer working one-on-one with people for almost 15 years. And at the same time, I was a competitive bodybuilder also for almost 15 years. I competed in 28 competitions, had a pretty good run there. And then after that, when the internet phenomenon hit, I started coaching and training people online. And that's what I've been doing to this day. Still coaching people, still training people, but doing it on the internet at our Burn the Fat Inner Circle community. And I'm a blogger, fitness writer, and author of two books on fat loss.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your new book. We have a ton of questions that we're going to be hitting on too along the way. But, you know, obviously we had you on a couple weeks ago, I guess about 2 months ago, to talk about your new book, Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle. Obviously, the ebook was best selling, you know, for the last 10 years, and now you're coming out with a hardcover version with, you know, the same title. So, could you kind of talk a little bit about, you know, for someone that's never really heard about Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, or read the original version, you know, what's this book about?
Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle is about the secrets of the leanest people in the world, people like bodybuilders and fitness models. But it's not about becoming a bodybuilder or getting ripped, unless that's what you want. It's more about how to steal some of those fitness model bodybuilder secrets and then use them to reach your own goals, whatever that is, anything. We've got people who have 100 pounds to lose who lost that successfully, or people who are down to the last 10 pounds of stubborn fat and they want to see their abs. And we have people who say that my goal is just to get more muscle tone. And we have people who say, I want to gain more muscle. So whatever your goals, you know, you can use this to achieve your goals. It's not just for bodybuilders. And now my goal is to help millions of people to get leaner and stronger and fitter and healthier using this system. It's basically, if you want it in a nutshell, it's the bodybuilder system.
For people out there that, you know, again, this is kind of the interesting part that I want to know a little bit about. It's like getting the book from, you know, where it's been on the internet, really been a phenomenon. And then the process to getting it published from a major publisher in New York. What was that like? How did that happen?
Yeah, well, when you first introduced it, you said, hey, you have a new book. And actually, it has been out there for 10 years already. But I self-published it. The first time in 2003 as an ebook. And back then, most people didn't even know what ebooks were. And I mean, it's amazing how far things have come now with this whole digital revolution. But back then, people just laughed at me. Like, people aren't going to pay money for a download. Stuff on the internet is supposed to be free. So it's really kind of funny. But it was very, very successful. With the internet, we were able to reach people in 154 countries. But my goal now, again, is to reach literally millions of people. I want to see if we can reach a bigger audience, to reach some of the people in the weight loss field, people who they want to lose weight. And the first thing they think of is, I'm going to go on a diet. And they're not thinking about the other elements that are involved in that, and they're just going out and they're looking for a diet book, or, you know, they follow whatever's on the talk shows or whatever's in the tabloids. I want to see if we can reach those people with this message and see if we can help them borrow some of the stuff that's made, you know, physique athletes so successful, mainly the weight training, to get people weight training. So the goal with, you know, putting this in a hard copy was just to get the message out more to the people who really, really need it the most.
Well, it's kind of a weird thing with the internet where you can basically reach anyone on the planet, but there's also kind of a barrier to entry for people that sometimes want to just like hold something in their hands. You know, they want that, that material object to be able to, you know, read something. Some people are still resisting the Kindles of the world and things like that.
Right.
So it does definitely seem like this is going to help you kind of, you know, reach that general population that might not even, like you said, people still don't know what ebooks are. They might not know, you know, if I get a PDF, how do I even digest that? Do I have to sit at my laptop all day and read it?
Right, right. It used to be only a PDF and people would actually print it out and put it in a 3-ring binder. And yep. Somebody cracked a joke the other day. They're like, yeah, you should have called your book Burn the Cartridge, Feed the Paper.
That's why we got Kinko's, guys. You got to go to your FedEx Kinko's and your Staples to print those out. Don't be nuts. So let's talk about some very vital stuff because first off, let's be real. We're talking December 10th right now. The holidays are coming up. People are starting to get ready to, I mean, they had their first event with Thanksgiving, at least in the United States, but now is, you know, Christmas, holidays coming up. People are going to be surrounded by food. I'd love if you could talk a little bit about, you know, for people out there, what advice do you have for them? Because it's going to be like, it's going to be a brutal, bloody war for them.
You know, the first thing that I think of when I hear this every year is why do people see it that way? Because maybe people are out there going to a Christmas party or a holiday party every single day, but I don't think so. I don't think it's all that different than it is the rest of the year, except in people's belief and perception that it's going to be really hard. I mean, the way I look at it, let's see, I've got some family time with Thanksgiving. So there's a big meal. There's going to be lots of food around. There's going to be dessert. And then maybe a couple holiday events. I don't have a huge social calendar. Maybe I go to 2 or 3 parties over the whole holiday season. And then there's Christmas. Again, the food's coming out. And then New Year's. So, I mean, what is that? 4, 5, 6 eating events? The way I look at it, that's just like it is all year round anyways. You can allow yourself to relax a little bit once a week and eat whatever you want. So I don't see this as anything different. I think it's business as usual. And the problem is people think they have to be all or nothing. They think that I can either enjoy the holidays and I'm going to have to accept getting fat, or I'm going to have to be on a strict diet and the holidays are going to be miserable. But it's not either or. You know, Kevin, about, we've talked before about the holiday challenges that we used to run, haven't we?
Absolutely, yeah, definitely last time.
Yeah, we used to do something just to prove this whole point. We used to do something unique. Most people would be having their transformation challenges either right in January, New Year, New You, and we actually are doing that this year, or they would have a shape up for summer because that's the timing that, you know, most people connect with when they want to get in shape. And we decided to go against the grain, and for the past 4 years, we did what we call the holiday challenge, and people thought we were crazy because of the timing. We would start a body transformation challenge the week before Thanksgiving, and then it would run for 7 weeks across Christmas and New Year's, and it would finish in the first or second week in January. And what we saw is people transforming themselves completely, some people getting in the absolute best shape of their life during the 7 weeks over the holidays, proving that you can do it. But the interesting thing is we would interview the winners of the contest and say, how did you do it? What did you, how did you train? How did you eat? And almost all of them said they weren't being 100% strict. They enjoyed the holidays. They had some champagne. They had some pumpkin pie. They had some cake. They went to the parties. All they did is they just didn't overindulge and they didn't take an all or nothing attitude. They just basically planned ahead and they built it into their program. And the other big thing is they had a goal. They didn't wait till January to set a New Year's resolution. They didn't wait. They said, why wait? I mean, why does everybody wait 6 or 7 weeks? It's November or it's early December. You know, I'm just going to wait until January when it's a better time. There never is a better time. I mean, now is the best time, whenever that now is.
Well, that's what it is, right? It's kind of people giving themselves a license to eat because everyone else around them is. So, you know, maybe they're just trying to use it as an excuse to go after it themselves. I don't know, man. So let's talk, because we did get some questions about like appetite control and stuff like that. Is there anything that people can do out there to help preemptively control their appetite, so when they do go to these parties, they even have even more of an incentive to not indulge?
Yeah, well, I'm going to give one that it's strange that it's against the grain right now. The funny the way trends go, but first of all, I'd say eat breakfast. And the reason I say that it's against the trend is because I watched the way that these trends go over the years. And for years, you ask any dietitian or nutritionist, what's the most important meal of the day? Oh, breakfast. Some people who train, they might say, well, it's the post-workout meal. But conventional wisdom, and it still is in the mainstream, eat breakfast. But I can give you one really good reason that people should eat breakfast is, for most people, most of the time, it controls your appetite through the day. And one of the reasons you hear that eating at night makes you fat isn't because there's any, you know, calorie fairies that shuttle all the calories into body fat, you know, no matter what your energy balance is at the end of the day. It's very simply that people break down later in the day because they didn't eat early in the day. So is it absolutely mandatory to eat breakfast? No, there's certain people who have discovered that, well, I'm just not a breakfast type, and they can control their intake the rest of the day. But what happens to the average person if they skip breakfast? They get hungry late in the day. They cheat. They binge. So that would be number one. Do you want to hear some others?
I think we should give people, yeah, okay. Give some ammo, man.
Sure. All right. Okay. We talked about how my philosophy is the bodybuilding style of nutrition. Burn the fat, feed the muscle. That program is based on bodybuilder and fitness model techniques. One of the most basic is just eat a protein in every meal. And there's a lot of things that are controversial in nutrition today. I don't hear a lot of controversy about this because the evidence is behind it. Protein is an appetite suppressant. Out of all the macronutrients, it's the most appetite suppressive. And a lot of people think it's dietary fat, but that's not the case. Protein is the most satiating. It's the most filling of the macronutrients. The dietary fat is more, I think, of a psychological satisfaction because of the richness. So your goal is eat a protein with every meal. And that's been bodybuilding nutrition 101 forever. And I think everybody should do that. People who are just trying to lose weight, is make sure you put a protein. The dietary fat, again, I mentioned there's a psychological satisfaction, if nothing else. But the other reason you can eat healthy fats and make sure you include them in your diet is for that very reason. So if you go on a very low-fat diet and all you're eating is very lean proteins and carbohydrates, that does not suppress the appetite as much. Fiber, for sure. Pay attention to your fiber count. Most people are going to be aiming for 25, 35 grams a day. You can get those from fruits, especially from the berries. A lot of people don't realize how much higher the berries are in fiber than some of the other fruits. Most fruits, almost any fruits, apples, they're good for suppressing appetite. Sometimes even taking a piece of fruit at the beginning of a meal or before a meal can fill you up. But fill your plates up with high fiber fruits and with vegetables, green veggies, non-starchy carbs. And you do get some fiber from the starchy carbs, but you got to watch the calories there. Water is another one. Water, technically, it's not a appetite suppressant in the hormonal sense. Like certain things you do or certain things you eat actually increase the hunger hormones or decrease hunger hormones, or they increase the satiety hormones or decrease them. Water may not do that, but there are studies show that if you drink water before a meal, you drink water during a meal, that can help suppress your appetite. And then I would just say experiment with food, because everybody is unique. And I think people need to raise their sensitivity to how foods are affecting how they feel in that period after the meal. But during the meal, for sure, how they feel, you can sense if you're getting full or not from what you eat. And then sometimes people get busy and they forget. So I think you should become more conscious of how you feel during the meal and then keep paying attention for a few hours after the meal. And you may find that there's certain foods that make you feel fuller than others. And whether there's a study that says that's scientifically proven or not, I would really trust your instincts on that when it comes to picking foods. Oh, one more. You get your sleep. The research on sleep over the last 5 years has been unbelievable. It's so heavily studied now. And sleep deprivation does increase the hunger hormones. So, and you don't need too much either. I think one of the recent studies was really interesting. They showed there's a U-shaped curve with the sleep. So more is not necessarily better. It's like a lot of things. There's an ideal, a sweet spot, an ideal amount right in the middle. So 7-8 hours, it does look like the right amount. If you're sleeping 9 to 10 hours a day, we actually find that people's weight loss results aren't as good. And if you're sleeping only 5 hours or 5.5 hours, not only weight loss results not as good, but the composition of the weight you lose, not so good. You could lose weight if you're eating a calorie deficit, but you end up losing more lean tissue.
If you're sleeping 10 hours a day, you need a hobby or something like that.
Because yeah,
I don't know what I'd do if I slept 10 hours a day. Well, that's great. I think, you know, for people out there, that gives you a ton of options and a ton of things that you can do to just, you know, make sure that you are staying on track and not overindulging when it comes to
the You know, holidays. I just thought of another one because you were asking about what people can do on the holidays. The alcohol thing. Mm-hmm. Got to keep it to a minimum because the alcohol, it distorts the way you perceive hunger. And also, I think the men should be more on guard because some of the interesting research shows differences between men and women. So the correlation between drinking alcohol and body fat gain, it's a lot stronger in men. And I think there's an explanation for that is men will tend to eat and then drink on top of it, and the women will drink and then not eat. So the guys especially got to be careful. And on top of that, if you drink too many, you know, by the end of the night, I mean, just anything goes. Next thing you know, you're eating pizza and cheese fries and lowers your inhibitions.
Absolutely. The other thing that I wanted to ask you about, you know, personally for a client, I have a client who literally, you know, does great. For 3 or 4 days, he's perfect, you know, with his nutrition. And it seems like on that fourth day, that fifth day, it's just like it just becomes too much. I end up, you know, there's stuff around the house because, you know, he does have a family and it happens. You know, he ends up eating a big bag of, you know, cookies or something like that. You know, what is that? Is there something that, you know, he can do to make sure that once he gets towards that kind of tipping point where it seems to, you know, happen with some people to kind of avoid that binge when it comes to that fourth, fifth day?
Yeah. This is the biggest challenge most people face is they already have the program and they have a hard time following it. They just break down at some point. I think it's the reason that happens could be different for everybody. But I know one reason is the people look at how many changes they have to make and it's pretty overwhelming and then they just kind of melt down. I mean, if we want to get lean, burn the fat, get in shape, get healthy and stay that way and not just be on the diet up and down roller coaster again. We got to make lifestyle change and that's a lot of changes. But making all those changes takes time. You know, like the old saying goes, the only way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time, right? So I think that's the way that some people have to approach this lifestyle change for their nutrition and for their training is focus on one thing, just one bite at a time. And then the question just becomes, which bite do I take first? What's the most important thing? And it's usually not that hard to figure out if you'll give some thought to it, because there's usually one thing that's really messing people up, one thing that's creating a bottleneck so that it messes everything else up. Like if you're messing up one thing in your nutrition, that no matter how hard you're training, that you're not getting the full benefits of the training. Just let me give you an example. When you take a complete newbie who's just never paid attention to nutrition before, drinking soda or high calorie drinks like dessert coffees, or they're hooked on those energy drinks. You know, those, you see the size of the cans on those things lately? I mean, they used to be, what were they? Used to be 12 ounces or 16 ounces, and then they're 18 ounces, and then they're 20, and then they're 22.
It's nuts.
It's crazy. People are getting, on top of all the stimulants, you get all the sugar in there, and people are getting hundreds and hundreds of extra calories. So it's just a simple matter of when you're starting out, if overwhelm and all these changes is the reason people are falling off, make one change and just say to yourself one habit at a time and think about habits. So I'm going to change this habit. I am going to not just quit cold turkey, but even better is to use a replacement strategy, because if you quit something cold turkey, it leaves a void and the void always begs to be filled with something else. So, you know, I mentioned water before. So instead of you get a craving for that soda, or you feel like I'm dragging, I need an energy drink, say, no, I'm not going to have it, but instead of having nothing, I'm going to grab a water instead. So you've replaced one thing for the other. Stick with that for at least 3 weeks, even a month, 3-4 weeks. You can do that. Okay. If somebody is breaking down after 3 or 4 days, that's understandable if you have this gigantic program and there's 50 different things you have to do. But can you make one change for 3 or 4 weeks? Yeah, sure. Everybody can do that. And then just knock off the next habit. And in a year, that's 12 or 15 habits changed permanently, part of your lifestyle now. And I think that's one of the big reasons that people fall off, and that's one solution.
Now, I wanted to talk to you about, you know, again, you know, with the book coming out, you've talked about this new mission statement. Could you tell, like, talk a little bit about that? Because, you know, again, one of the big things about this book as a package is that it is like a complete guide, which is one of my favorite things about it. So I'd love if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I appreciate you saying that, because it is a complete program. It's nutrition, it's training, it's both kinds of training. It's training for the cardio and training for the muscle and the strength, and it's the mental and the psychology side. So I really fine-tuned my purpose and my mission and the reason why I'm doing this and how I want to help people, especially if I'm reaching out and trying to get out, step outside of my world, my bodybuilding world, and even step outside a little bit of the fitness community where, okay, they're already sold on fitness. So I'm preaching to the choir on the training stuff and on the muscle stuff, but there's millions of people out there. The only thing they think of with weight loss is just diet. And it's utterly incomplete. So I kind of reverse engineered and worked backwards from that. I mean, what is it that people should really be focusing on? And that's where this came from. My mission is to help people get leaner, stronger, fitter, and healthier. And that covers it all. It covers it all. And if you want that, if you want to achieve those, all four of those things, you don't do it with just a diet. Because there's no diet that can help you get stronger. And there's no diet that can help you get fitter. Only the training can do that. And sometimes a diet's not even healthy. So the diet may or may not make you healthier. And it's when you add the training in conjunction with nutrition. I don't even like the word diet. There's just too much negative baggage with it. I would rather say, let's get you on a nutrition program. And yeah, it is semantics, but that's important. It's really, really important. It changes the whole way you perceive this thing. So leaner, stronger, fitter, and healthier. That's my mission. And my mission is to get people to adopt that as their goal, because their whole life will change. Everything will change. I mean, why settle for just weight loss? Weight loss. You could lose weight and not really look that much better. You've heard of the skinny fat person, right? Of course.
For years, man.
Yeah, it's not just fitness slang. The researchers write about this. They just don't call it skinny fat. They call it normal weight obesity. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that just came onto my radar only a year ago, I read all the obesity journals, and they're using this other term, and they're calling it sarcopenic obesity. And sarcopenic obesity is not only are you a skinny fat person, not only is you have a high body fat level for your body weight, you have an extremely low level of muscle mass. I wish we had a visual aid here, and I could show you one of those MRI scans or a CAT scan that shows a cross section of, say, a leg or an arm. And you look at the person who trains and you look at the person who just diets. And the person who trains, you see the little white spot in the middle of the scan. That's the bone. And then if you colored it in, the large section around the bone would be red. That's all the muscle. And that would be the big section of tissue. And then on the outside, just a little layer of white, and that would be the fat. And then if you switch the screen and go to the person who only did the diet, you would see the white bone in the middle, and you'd hardly see any red. You'd hardly see any muscle. It's like the whole limb is white. It's just big mass of fat around the bone. Like if you could visualize one of your pipes in your house with this layer of insulation around it, just inches thick, that's what a person's body composition looks like. And that's what people get if they just diet. So yeah, my mission, hey, let's get strength and muscle and weight training and fitness out to everybody.
Again, like we talked a little bit about before, just having that broad reach of having, you know, the book on things like Amazon.com, and I'm very pumped you guys also did an audio version. You know, that reach is just going to be way greater. And I'm hoping people get this book in their hands and they buy a copy for their friends. And, you know, it's not too late if you want a stocking stuff. Well, it might have to be a big stocking, but you know, you could wrap it up and put it next to it or something like that. You know, but it's definitely something that you're going to want to share, you know, and buy a couple of copies for. One other thing that I wanted to talk about is, you know, you talk about how things are always changing in terms of the advice that people are giving, you know, whether it's not eating breakfast or, you know, maybe you should go, you know, high saturated fat now. Another thing that's come up is people talking about taking breaks from dieting altogether. You know, and maybe this is the time people should do is, you know, take a break over the holidays. You know, you've worked hard all year, you know, psychologically you need a break. You know, what's up with that? Is that something that people need to do?
It's a good idea for a lot of people who are chronic dieters. There's a lot of people doing really good work in this area. Our mutual friend Lee Peel is doing great work here. I mean, I can give a thumbs up to check out her book, Starve Mode, for people who are interested in learning about taking diet breaks and refeeding. The bodybuilders have been doing it for a long time. If you think about this, look at the difference between – this is why I say the bodybuilding method is so superior, and a lot of people kind of shrug it off because they say, well, I'm not a bodybuilder or this won't work for me. But look at the whole bodybuilder philosophy. There is a contest season and then there is a muscle building season. And to achieve those goals, there's two completely different programs. For the muscle building season, you're eating a lot of food. In fact, it's not even just a break. Some people take a break from their diet and they go up to maintenance, but they eat in a surplus, at least some of the time. And that's how you gain muscle. You combine caloric surplus with all the other right conditions and with the training, you gain muscle. And then there comes a time when they cut down. It's a contest, or if they're not a competitor, it's a photo shoot, or if it's just for personal reasons, they're getting ready for the summer, whatever. You can see there's an analogy there. There's a building season and a burning or a cutting season, and then they're in caloric deficit. But most of the year, they're not in caloric deficit. That's just for the peaking phase or the cutting phase. And the difference between that approach and the typical dieter is people get in this trap, this cycle of dieting and dieting and dieting and dieting, and they're always in restriction and they're never bringing their calories back up because they're terrified to do it. They're afraid they're going to gain weight. Well, of course they're going to gain weight. I mean, you're going to gain, if you were on low carbs especially and you reintroduced the carbs, you're going to gain some water and glycogen weight. I mean, you might gain some lean mass, but people are so focused only on scale instead of body composition, they don't consider that. So I do think it's a good idea to take diet breaks, but even in a bigger picture way is to set up your training and your nutrition in cycles like that. And I know bodybuilders who've done that even after they retired. I remember reading Frank Zane, former three-time Mr. Olympia, said that even after he retired from competition, he wanted to stay on top of his game. And every year he would do a mock competition. So there's 52 weeks in a year, and he would take like 12 of those weeks and cut up. And so he would diet down. He had a peak condition, and then it's back to a maintenance. You can call it taking a break. So yeah, we could talk about refeeds. We could talk about carb cycling. We could talk about all the short-term diet breaks. I think we might want to go a little bit bigger picture here and look at how people are living like all year round. And I think if more people took that approach instead of being afraid of food, people are afraid. They're just afraid to eat. They're just trapped in this dieting mentality. What people can do if they haven't hit their goal yet, because the difference between bodybuilders and someone who's really overweight is the bodybuilder is going from already lean to ripped, right? But you got someone who's carrying a lot of excess body fat. They're not even to average or to lean yet, let alone to ripped. So they might not want to go take a muscle building phase. They're just not at that point yet. That's the person who's going to take a diet break. And it can be done on a micro level with one-day refeeds. And I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea physiologically and psychologically, because it's like a release valve. You get to take a break. You just eat more every several days. For example, one popular cycle is 3 days in calorie deficit and or on low carbs if you're using a low-carb approach. And then one day you bring your calories and your carbs back up. So that's a simple 3-1 calorie or carb cycle where you refeed every fourth day. And I know that has worked beautifully for at least 10 years for the people following our program. And for people who are really, really depleted, they've been in deficit a long, long time, they might want to take a longer break and just allow themselves to go up, say, for a week. Maybe some people might go up 2 weeks, but at least take a week break. And it's kind of like a reset. Literally, in some ways, your hormones reset. The hormones that regulate metabolism, we talked about appetite before. When you're in that dieted down mode, hunger hormones go up. Hormones that regulate metabolic rate go down. You take that refeed, you kind of reset that and get back to normal. So does that answer the question?
No, that was awesome, actually. And, you know, again, it's one of those things that it's almost like people are getting paralyzed from all the information, all those tips out there. But, you know, again, that's some good stuff, man. This is why I love having Tom on the show. Because right now, like, you hear me not talking, like, you know, corresponding back to Tom while he's talking, it's because I'm writing stuff down right now. All right. So the other thing I wanted to ask you about, and again, this is, you know, kind of along the same path. This is something that I've talked to Lee Peel about before as well. But, you know, do people need to be concerned about overtraining when in a deficit and, you know, people just going in the gym, you know, busting their ass and, like, you know, not being able to walk on the way out. And then at the same time, they're in a big deficit. So what do you think, you know, what about, you know, for the people that feel like, you know, doing some kind of training every day helps them to stay on track? Because again, that's another thing. Some people feel like, you know, if I get up in the morning and I go train, I'm going to be in, you know, the best shape of, you know, staying on track with my diet today. You know, what about those people too?
Well, first, should people be concerned about really intense training when in a calorie deficit? Yes. And I think this is an area where there's advancements being made in this whole discussion about cyclical dieting. It's going beyond cyclical dieting. It's integrating the refeed or the diet break or the carb cycling with the training. And before, people used to just talk about the nutrition. Let's just take a high carb day, or let's just take a diet break, or let's just, on the big picture level, don't be dieting all the time. Why don't you work on muscle building for a while so you can go into a surplus and gain some muscle and really reset? But now what we're finding out is that the harder and more intensely and the more volume of training you're doing while you're in a deficit, and the steeper the deficit, strangely enough, that can actually decrease metabolism more than crash diet alone. And I saw at least two studies on this. I don't remember the journal or the author, but the gist of it was you compare two groups, the one group that's just dieting in a deficit for fat loss, and the one group that's dieting and doing high volume of training, and you measure the amount that metabolic rate adapts. And I'm talking about adaptive thermogenesis. Some people call that the starvation response, where metabolism slows down to calorie restriction. The group that was restricting calories and training like crazy had more decrease in metabolism than diet alone. So the conclusion people have come to is, you can sometimes get away with pretty strict diets with pretty aggressive deficits if your training volume is moderated and you're not training like a beast every single day. You're doing Insanity or, you know, just all out CrossFit every day, or high intensity interval training, or whatever, you know, an hour and a half of steady state cardio, whatever it is. You can get away with the aggressive caloric deficit. And you can sometimes get away with a high volume of training if you're eating a lot. But you can't do both. You can't be training like crazy and be in an extreme deficit and get away with that. That's going to have some repercussions. So I think people need to be really careful with that. And unfortunately, a lot of times the two go together. Have you seen in the last, I'd say, last 2 years, all of the hype on the internet about metabolic damage?
Yeah.
One of the reasons that came up is the people who are talking about it are, they're involved in the physique and bodybuilding and fitness world, and bikini and women's figure have exploded, you know, in the last half a decade or so. So we got a lot of women getting involved, and especially in the women, that's really the approach that a lot of them are taking, or unfortunately, some of the coaches are taking. You see them doing an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours of cardio a day or more, and the diet's extreme. They're on 1,000 calories, 1,200 calories. That's going to get you some rapid fat loss in the beginning, and then that's just going to come to a screeching halt and really backfire badly. Yeah, so,
have you seen like that? Someone that I know was part of one of these. She was, you know, in female physique competitions, and they actually are given like a packet with all this stuff, like with their program and in their training and their nutrition. And it's just like you said, the extreme cardio stuff and then the extreme deficit. And, you know, she was wondering why she wasn't really, you know, noticing a change. She was getting really lean, but that's all she looked was really lean. You know, muscle mass wasn't really where she wanted it or needed it to be. I don't know if this is something that's kind of popping up, but there's more of these physique companies that are working with women out there to help, you know, get them into this, you know, shape.
Yeah, there are. There's coaching companies, and well, I mean, I'm amazed at the popularity of women. In fact, because bodybuilding for women has gotten less popular, they created a new division called physique, mm-hmm. which is basically female bodybuilding reborn, which I'm very happy to see because it was getting a little out of hand. but the popularity has exploded. I've been to some contests and there was 110, 120 women. I'm like, wow. And I'm glad it's kind of given a revival to bodybuilding because we weren't sure what's going to happen to bodybuilding. The only problem is if you're competing and then there's the women and the guys, it's the same show. You know, you're there till like 1 o'clock in the morning before you're one of the guys and you get, but anyways, yeah, it's gotten really, really popular. So this has popped up more and more. And I think what you might be talking about is a lot of cookie cutter advice. Mm-hmm. And you know, you just don't need that much cardio. And I'm definitely a proponent of cardio. I like cardio. I have no problem with doing, if it's necessary for short periods of time, 45 minutes, an hour, almost every day for short periods of time, if you want to accelerate fat loss. But I think a good way to look at cardio is to call it a fat loss accelerator, not as the single key to burning fat. We need to kind of reset our thinking about this a little bit. And what you need to burn fat is caloric deficit. And you can achieve that with nutrition alone. There's no doubt about it. I know we've seen people that just diet. They don't do any exercise. They lose weight. In fact, sometimes people who go in the hospital on total bed rest, they lose weight. Now, how is that? Well, because something is wrong with them medically, and they just can't eat. They can't put food down. So they're doing absolutely nothing. So, I mean, it may seem irrelevant, but it's a pretty good counter example of how, you know, exercise and activity is not absolutely mandatory to lose weight. Caloric deficit is. So here's, you know, this whole conversation comes full circle to what is the proper balance between cutting down your calories from nutrition and burning more from cardio, and finding a sensible balance and knowing that you don't need hours of cardio. You know, maybe if you've gotten yourself into that vicious cycle of you feel like, well, if I don't do an hour of cardio a day, I feel like I'm not going to lose, or I'm actually going to gain. Or if you're doing 2 hours of cardio a day, I mean, there, that's time for a reset right there.
Well, we talked a little bit about the four elements in the book last time, but to be honest, like the most interesting part about, you know, what fat loss or, you know, just staying on track is the mental training. So I'd love if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite subjects because you've got nutrition program, but then you've got that guy who every 3 or 4 days breaks down. You've got people who have a fantastic training program from one of the best trainers, and the trainer gives them the prescription. They just don't follow it. And the question is, why don't they follow it? And usually it boils down to an unfocused mind, no goals. And this is what mental training is. Mental training is the part of the overall formula here for success, for getting motivated, for keeping motivated, to get you to take action, and to get you to take action automatically. Basically, mental training is what helps you stick with your program. And the most basic strategy is how to set goals. And it seems simple enough, but I think there's a few little nuances that everybody should know about. It's so important. I mean, the biggest chapter in my book is about goal setting. And a lot of people say that they feel that's the most important chapter in the book, even though it has nothing to do with training or nutrition. And there's a couple of keys on setting goals. One is you have to have clarity. I mean, totally specific. You have to know exactly what you want, because it is a goal to say, I want to lose weight, but that's not a good goal. That's like saying, I'm going on a trip and I want to go west. That's not a very good goal. That's not a very good travel plan. So you have to nail down your destination. And I mean specifically in terms of numbers, what you want to weigh, what size clothes you want to wear, what do you want your measurements to be? What's your waist size? How do you want your body to look? See, I think it should include a picture. Your brain thinks in pictures. So flip through the magazines, go through the internet, find a picture of someone that you consider your ideal body. Your own standards. It doesn't have to be anybody else's standards. What you think is an ideal body. It might not be anywhere near a bodybuilder or even a fitness model, whatever you want, whether that's the tone look, but have a picture too and have it specific. And so you have a picture and you have all those numbers. That's clarity. And that's really one of the biggest keys to goal setting. And then speaking of pictures, another basic but really powerful mental training strategy is the visualization. And the athletes have been doing it for years and they call it mental rehearsal. And I think there's two ways you should do it, not just one. You know, the first one I already talked about is have a picture in your mind of exactly how you want to look like. And not only have that picture, but imagine that you already look that way. This is me. I mean, even literally, I know this sounds corny, but I swear you can ask anybody who's been doing this. You take a picture of someone else's body, take a picture of you, cut your head off and put your head on their body. Now, that's really good retraining for changing your self-image or for practicing visualization. And what you do is, I would call this a mental training program. So just like you schedule a time to go work out, you're going to carve out time to train your brain. And for a lot of people, right before they go to bed or first thing in the morning, best times to do it, because it's a time that people have. They haven't gotten into their busy day. And it's also a time where that it kind of sinks into your subconscious mind. So that's the first kind of picture, is the body that you want. And seeing yourself as already there. And then the second is literally the mental rehearsal, the practice of your skill. And, you know, the golfers were really, really famous for this. Jack Nicklaus, he said that he never hit a golf shot in his entire career, not even a practice golf shot, without having a clear mental picture of it first. He would see the setup. He would visualize the swing, hitting the ball, and then he would visualize watching the trajectory of the ball and just dropping down and landing right where he wanted it. So here's the analogy in fitness. I talked about Frank Zane before. Frank Zane was a master of psychology. In fact, I think his degree was in psychology. And he said that he visualized himself winning the Mr. Olympia 1 million times in his mind before he did it in reality. So he pictured himself winning. And other bodybuilders and athletes in every sport, they've actually visualized their workouts. And they do it before they train. They do it while they train. And the most interesting part of this is, as soon as you start talking about this mind stuff, some people kind of tune out and they think it's really airy-fairy. But this is backed up by research. And one of the things that surprised me the most was it doesn't just show up in the psychology journals. It shows up in the exercise science journals. So imagine my surprise. One day I get my Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research in the mail and I open it up and there's a study on visualization there. And it showed that the group of subjects who visualized hitting the lift, succeeding the lift, or visualizing actually their workouts performed better than the group that didn't. And the conclusion at the end of the study was not only that visualization is effective for improving performance, they said that strength and conditioning coaches need to start teaching their athletes how to do this. So it goes deeper than that, but that's two really basic and powerful mental training techniques, goals and visualization.
Well, that's not super cool, because I think for, you know, so many people out there, that's untapped. Like, people aren't taking that and are using that as, you know, an advantage for them.
And that should be exciting. That should be really exciting to people, because if you find out something you're not doing, that's room to improve. And totally. People are always looking for how else. They're looking for an extra edge. And for most people, what are they thinking about when it's an extra edge? Unfortunately, it's drugs for some people. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't want to take drugs, they figure a supplement will do it all for them. But, you know, maybe the power of the mind can do more for you than any supplement.
All right, so, you know, in a recent article, you talked about how you've been training. You talked a little bit before in the show how you've been training for 30 years. You've never missed a week of training. So, well, how do you do it? Like, you know, for some people out there, you know, life, they say, you know, life gets in the way or something like that. I don't have time to train. How do you do it? Because you're a pretty busy person. Like, it's hard to get you on the phone and, you know, you're always blogging, you're always, you know, writing and stuff like that. How do you continue to stay consistent?
Okay, well, let me clarify first. It's not that I've never missed a week of training. I've never missed more than a week because I do think, like we take diet breaks, it's helpful from time to time to take training breaks. So I do take a week off from time to time and just let my body recover. And I have had times when I got injured and I had to take a 1 week layoff. When I originally injured my lower back and I found out that I had a ruptured L4, there was a short period of time with some pretty bad pain, and it was 1 week of complete rest, but I was right back to it after that. But yeah, I mean, I haven't taken more than a week off ever in 30 years. And part of it's because I love training. I'm passionate about training. But I think the main thing for me is that I don't just see bodybuilding and training as a sport. I don't just see it as recreation. I don't just see it as exercise. To me, it's lifestyle. And it has been, excuse me, it has been since the very, very beginning. I think I mentioned before I started training when I was 14, and the first thing on training I ever picked up was Muscle and Fitness magazine, and Joe Weider was the, rest in peace. He was the editor and publisher of Muscle and Fitness magazine, and he wrote these editorials in the beginning, and I don't know if anybody ever read those editorials. Maybe they jumped into the, you know, how to blast your biceps and gain an inch on your arms in 7 weeks, but I used to read those editorials, and he always talked about the bodybuilding lifestyle. So I was a teenager and I had this idea put in my head at a really young age that this is a lifestyle. This is the way you live. So I never, ever approached this as like the way that people approach a diet program. I'm going on this diet for 12 weeks. Well, then what? Then what? Look at how the whole diet industry and the whole weight loss industry is set up. And I've learned this firsthand more than ever before in the last year, having worked with the mainstream publishers, is it's all set up on these time frames. They want a 7-day program. They want a 10-day promise, take off 10 pounds in 10 days. They want a 28-day program. And I'm a huge believer in goals. So I think we set time-bound goals. But the time-bound goals are just things that happen along the path of this lifestyle that we're living. So above these goals, which are just short-term stepping stones to focus on, it's just the way I live. It's not even an option to stop. It's what I do. And if I stop even for several days, it doesn't feel good. It just, something feels out of sorts. So yeah, I'm busy. I get really, really busy. I think if I want to give everybody at least a practical strategy to walk away with, it's make it a priority. Priority is what's important to you. So basically we're talking about your values, and values is a big deal. If people would put health high on their list of values, it would change their behavior a lot. For me, it's a really high value to train. So it's on the priority list. So let's say I'm really busy, and the best way I could describe it is there's fires burning all around me. And it's like, I got to put this fire out. I got to do this. I got to do this. And that temptation or urge to skip the workout, it comes up. It happens to me all the time. And I just say to myself, I got to put myself first because this is important to me. This is the top of my value list. So let it burn. Let it burn. When I come back, I'm going to feel better because usually I'm feeling pretty stressed out and all that busy time. Usually I go to the gym and it's, you know, it's kind of like a zen-like thing. It's just my time to focus and get away. And even though it's hard training, it's de-stressing in a way. And when I come back, if it was really important, the fire's still burning, I put it out then. And funny enough, a lot of them have kind of burned out on their own, so it was never that big of a deal anyways. So I didn't need to skip the workout. That's how I do it. Hope that's helpful.
Yeah, and you know, I'd be really curious. I hope they have, you know, digitized those editorials from Joe. I think that'd be really cool to go back and read those. So I'm hoping, you know, the publisher, the editors over there still are keeping, you know, copies of those digitally to make sure they stay preserved.
Yeah, that would be great. I'm sure somebody's done that.
So, you know, again, you know, just talking about your training a little bit, you know, what are you up to these days? What's your training looking like?
Well, I do experiment all the time, and I tried somewhat different training programs, but I pretty much train the same way that I have my whole life. And I train the same way the last 8 years that I haven't been competing as when I did when I competed. The only difference is, you know, the diet hasn't been as quite as strict. I train with the bodybuilding style. I do, my program is a 4-day split. So I do body part training where I'm doing 2 or maybe 3 muscle groups each workout. And the way I split it up, I do chest and biceps. I train my forearms sometimes there right after biceps. And I'll have a back day and I'll do calves. So it's 1 major muscle group and 1 small muscle group. I have a day that's devoted to legs. It's quads and hams and shoulders and triceps. So that's a 4-day split. And the way I divide it up is I'll do 2 days in a row and then take 1 day off. So it's a 2-on-1-off split. And it doesn't fit evenly into a 7-day week. A lot of people are conditioned that a training program has to fit into a 7-day week. Sometimes they do that just because it's convenient. But I train each muscle group once every 6 days. And I'll tweak it a little bit. If I feel like I need some extra recovery, I can throw in an extra rest day. And then I'm hitting each muscle group once every 7 days. And if I feel really good, I'm completely rested and I want to hit it more often, I'll train a muscle group once every 5 days. And I think that's an interesting subject is the training frequency, because a lot of people are talking about more frequent training. And it's another one of the debates. Should you train each muscle group once a week or should you train twice a week? And I can tell you for sure that both ways work, because I've also done some experimenting with 2-day splits, with an upper lower split, where it's upper body 1 day and it's lower body and abs the next day. And that's done 4 times a week. So that has you work each muscle group twice a week. And I got good results with that. And I actually, Kevin, think that's probably the ideal, more ideal program for the average person. So what I'm doing with bodybuilding training is a body part split routine, because that's ideal for bodybuilding goals. So if I assume that the majority of people don't have bodybuilding goals, I might not recommend the same program. I might put them on a 2-day split. And that's exactly what I did in the book. There's a new training program in the book and it's a 2-day split. But I love training like that. I love bodybuilding training. I mean, you guys can call me a meathead and I'll take it as a compliment. You know, I like training for the pump. I do like having an arm day. I like having a leg day, and it is effective. So will I train like that forever? Maybe, maybe not. I might change. I like to experiment, but that's my default program. It has been for years and it works great.
Yeah. No one should ever, you know, really criticize anyone else's program, especially if that's, you know, what gets you in the gym. And, you know, no offense to anyone out there, but if they're giving you crap, Tom, you know, they have some mental issues that they should probably address beforehand. So, you know, again, we're talking about coming up to the holidays. You talked about, you know, doing challenges and stuff like that. Are you guys still doing a burn the fat challenge for the holidays coming up?
We are, but we're going to do it a little bit differently. It's going to be our first year ever doing a January challenge, a new year, new you challenge.
Cool.
Mainly the reason that we didn't do a holiday challenge, the one I talked about before that runs across Thanksgiving and Christmas and into New Year's, is because I have the new book launch and book tour going on. So that had me really, really busy. But also because you look at the participation, we used to do a summer challenge and it had twice the participation that the holiday challenge did. So if 2,000 people would do a summer challenge, 1,000 people would do the holiday challenge for a lot of those same reasons we talked about before. People just think it's too hard. And we figured, you know, we've never tried a challenge for the new year in January. And that's when most people want to start a fitness program. So like we said, for once, let's go ahead and do it in January. So from January 1st to January 14th, there's going to be a registration window to enter the Burn the Fat Challenge. And we may be doing it differently this year so that anybody can enter. And we're building a web page where you can go to www.burnthefatchallenge.com. And I'm going to have all the news and registration dates and details posted on that page for this challenge and for all the challenges in the future. And I hope to be able to invite more people into it. So by not having it restricted, you know, just to say our members, I think maybe instead of getting 2,000 people like we did in the summer challenge, maybe we'll get 3,000 or 4,000 people to do it in January. I think the more the merrier. I think it'll be a great motivator for a lot of people.
Yeah, so that, you know, you just need accountability is huge, and if you can get that, you know, on top of a great program, it's a much better formula for success.
Yeah, I agree completely, and thanks for mentioning that, because we do our challenge in a forum. And we set it up so that there's an accountability check every week. So unlike some challenges where you just enter and then at the end you show up and send in your results at the end, for this challenge, every week you log in and you put your results down. And that accountability, you know, if you want it, you want another thing that helps you keep motivated, that'll do it like nothing else, especially when you're doing it in a group and everybody's really supportive.
Talk a little bit more about the book, because, you know, for people out there who have, you know, maybe purchase Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, the ebook. What's different about this book version? You know, if we needed to give them, you know, a reason to pick it up besides being $16 on Amazon, which is just, it's kind of like robbery.
I know.
I get all that stuff for $16.
I don't know how Amazon makes any money, but
I don't think they do.
I think you're right. But yeah, it's a great deal. It's almost 400 pages. I mean, we call it the Bible of Fat Loss. And as you said before, it's a total program. Most people think of losing fat. Instantly, they think of diet. And what comes out mostly in January is a bunch of diet books. So what this program has always had is all the elements that you need to get lean and to get strong and to get fit and get healthy. It's got nutrition. It's got the cardio training to accelerate fat loss. It's got the resistance training to get stronger and to reshape your body. And it's got the psychology, it's got the mental training, it's got all four of those things. So that's what's the same. The other thing that's the same is it's still the same theme. You can learn, the average person, the regular person can learn some tricks from fitness models and bodybuilders and apply those to reach your own goals. That's the whole gist of it. But here's what's different. First of all, the most obvious thing is a hardcover. Now you can have it on your shelf. It was originally published in 2003. So that's been 10 years. A lot of new research comes out, and I think it's very important to be evidence-based, especially today when there's so many conflicting opinions and downright weird stuff in the diet field, to know that there's science behind what you recommended. But not only is there science, it's up-to-date science. So the program is based on science, but another difference is, again, we want to reach – I would love to be able to reach millions of people that this normally wouldn't reach. People who aren't bodybuilders, who aren't diehard fitness people, they just want to burn fat. And so we made it more accessible. It's been re-edited, reorganized. It's more practical. It's flexible. It's really flexible. So people say, hey, is it high carb or is it low carb? It's neither. It's carb customized. And I teach you how to customize it. Everything can be customized in the whole program. And in terms of what's new compared to the original edition, well, the whole book has been completely updated from cover to cover, but there's new chapters. A lot of people get stuck. They get great results for a while and they just flatline, they plateau. And that was one of the biggest requests that I've had over the years is, Tom, if I hit that plateau, how do I get past it? There's a brand new chapter on how to break plateaus. There's the brand new training program that I talked about before, the upper lower split, that's in the book. And it's basically, it's the same theme. It's still the same book. It's Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, but it's a brand new book at the same time.
And again, for people out there, at least in the United States, and I know that it's also available in the UK on Amazon as well. Pick it up. $16. You're going to blow $16 on two cups of coffee this week. So, you know, hopefully it's not one of those ones that is the dessert coffee full of all that junk from Starbucks. But, you know, Tom, obviously the book is complete. It's coming out. So now that the book's out, kind of behind you, what's next? What's the next thing, you know, on the horizon?
Good question. Well, we're going to keep pushing out this Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle message for quite a while. You know, for the whole next year, we're going to be working on getting the message out. After that, we're going to keep building the community, the Burn the Fat Inner Circle community, because I think community and support, having support teams and support partners is a huge part of staying motivated. So we're going to keep building the Burn the Fat community. And then I think that I'm probably going to kind of go back to my roots a little bit and do something that a lot of people have been asking me for and that I've wanted to do for a long time. And I am going to do that series on bodybuilding training that everybody's been asking me for years. I started to work on something like that years ago, and I called it Bodybuilding Secrets, and it was a completely separate blog. It was different than the Burn the Fat blog. It was all about serious, hardcore bodybuilding. So my next project is to kind of go back to my roots and do some training, hardcore bodybuilding training for the real serious muscle fans. So that may not be till a little bit later in next year, but that's in the works.
Very cool. And just for people out there, before we go, burnthefatblog.com, obviously, like we mentioned before, you can pick up the book itself on Amazon, any other, major retailers too. But the cool thing about Amazon is you can also, buy an audio version and a Kindle version as well. So there's tons of different ways, and even the Kindle version is like only a little, like $11. So, if you are getting a Kindle for the holidays or, you're picking one up, that might be another way to get the book. But other than that, Tom, always a pleasure, man, have you on the show. Like I said, I kind of go away with a couple pages of notes every time I have you on, and some new, tools for the fat loss battle for clients and stuff like that. So thank you so much. And I really hope we have you on again soon. And, again, is there anything else we missed? I think that's the good stuff, man.
Yeah, I think that's a wrap. Thanks for everything, Kevin.
All right, everyone. Thank you out there for listening. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. You can check us out at thefitcast.com. Tom and I are both on Twitter. I'll post all those links on the show notes. And until next time, like I said, make sure go to your local retailer, pick up the book. It's going to be a great way. Buy a couple copies, buy one for, your family members. If you're in the industry, this is a great book for you to buy those family members that are always hitting you up for fitness advice during Christmas. This is no joke. Every Christmas season, go to the parties. People ask me, Kevin, I need to lose 10 pounds. Guess what? Here's a book. Go read it. We'll talk later. All right. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Kevin.